today on Ag News Daily.
Our industry has really done a great job in minimizing lateral transmission and spread. When we look at the detections that we had in 2022 compared to 2014, 2015, the lateral spread is much lower.
March 7th, 2024, Ag News Daily podcast edition. Going to hit some headlines here before getting into a good conversation today. Are you ready to jump into it, Delaney?
I'm ready, Tanner. How about you?
I am. Parts of central and western Nebraska, northwest Kansas, southeastern Wyoming all now have winter weather alerts, according to the National Weather Service. Some areas are under a winter storm warning, while others are under a winter weather advisory. The storm warnings are in parts of Nebraska, Kansas, and Wyoming. All call for heavy snow and accumulation that could be between 2 and 8 inches. There are also pockets that could have heavy snow even more than that 8-inch total. We'll continue to keep an eye on that. Snowfall rates could be 2 to 3 inches per hour in some parts of the area. The warning for Wyoming only mentions snow, but the warnings for Nebraska and Kansas also mention the possibility for mixed precipitation. Here in Iowa, we've got the chance for some rains in the late afternoon, early evening. That could continue into tomorrow. It's nice to see a little bit of moisture come through the area. Also, the southern plains have a small forecast for some moisture as well. So it looks like a system is kind of moving across the country from west to east, Delaney.
Yeah, and I think there's one more system that's coming in from the Gulf into Texas, which should bring some storm showers for parts of Texas and Oklahoma into southern Kansas, which could certainly use the moisture. There's also some expected threats of hail and strong winds, as well as tornadoes on the backside of that system, but should be some wet conditions coming to those who need it most.
Yes, absolutely. Glad that you were able to tag on to that. Ag economists are revealing what is at risk for 2024 after there is a fallout potential from falling net farm income. And if interest rates don't retreat, this could create a little bit of an issue. Reality is beginning to hit some of the farmers as commodity prices are falling. 2024, the Ag Economist Monthly Monitor shows a projected major drop in net farm income, which we've already talked about. A survey of over 70 ag economists from across the country are basically showing strict pessimism. They think that there are two things that were important in February that came out of this monthly monitor. Each month they ask these economists to share their sentiment. And the sentiment from January to February was a large drop. They expected net farm income to shift down to $117 billion in 2024, which is lower than what the USDA anticipates at $121.7. That's a significant drop from where the USDA has net farm income pegged. Due to the elevated interest rates, the February monthly monitor shows that more than 40% of those surveyed expected interest rates to fall. No more than only 1% this year, which is not a positive for those in agriculture. With net farm income expected to take a hard fall this year and interest rates to remain flat, these economists don't see a very bright spot going into 2025. There are concerns of fallout and potential bankruptcies hitting the agricultural sector as they continue to push forward. We'll see what these negative impacts on financial ratios have as bankers and farmers continue to meet. Not a lot of good news coming out of that report this month, Delaney.
No, and to tie right into that, Tanner, we saw yesterday that Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell testified in front of the House Financial Services Committee, and his testimony was not all too rosy. He said that while they are making progress towards that 2% inflation rate that they're working toward, he wasn't confident that we would see that yet this year. He said, we're definitely, you know, heading in the right direction, but if the economy evolves broadly as expected, we will see interest rate cuts later this year. They do anticipate that we will maybe see one at the very tail end of this year, but he stated that the members of the FOMC need greater confidence that we are moving safely toward that 2% inflation mandate before initiating the first cut. We also saw, Tanner, in the greater economy, U.S. layoff announcements rose 3% last month to 11-month highs. The biggest sectors cutting jobs and laying off workers was the tech, financial, and transportation sectors. And while technology sector is down compared to what it was last year, it's still one of the largest layoff sectors out there. So that is also a greater indicator of how the U.S. economy is shaping up here.
Absolutely. To tag on top of your release of the article yesterday about POA and Valero facilities joining the Summit carbon pipeline, this is now going to require Summit to file for 14 more hazardous liquid pipeline permits within the state of Iowa. This is going to add around 340 miles in 22 additional counties. But after the Navigator CO2 pipeline ceased to move forward, obviously this produced an opportunity there. So as we look at ethanol news for production this week, we did get to see some updates coming there. Production did drop for the second week in a row, while stocks grew over the last 7 days. Production dropped to an average of 1.057 million barrels per day. That's down from 1.078. The Midwest, again, was the highest producing region, but that is no surprise. The ending stocks did rise. They rose to 26.051 million barrels. That is up from 26.022 the week before. So some standard production levels and a little bit of additional stocks for our listeners there, Delaney.
Well, Tanner, you and I, as well as any of our listeners that were at Commodity Classic last week, were amongst over 11,500 attendees to make the largest trade show and national Commodity Classic event that we've seen. After a record 10,040 attendees last year in Orlando, Houston broke the new event record with over 11,500 farmers, ranchers, exhibitors, industry stakeholders, and ag media.
Yes, that's doesn't surprise me. It seemed to be a lot of buzz and a very well attended show. But the last headlines that I've got today come out of Europe and Russia. In case our listeners missed our episode where we interviewed one of the farmers that's been protesting in Europe, there's now concern that this may travel to the U.S. It could be a deja vu moment for some of those that drove their tractors to Washington, but we don't necessarily have policies in place that require a lot of opposition. Surveys are currently being passed around to see what farmer sentiment is compared to the American government, to see what types of issues there may be in order to prevent, Delaney, farmers from protesting here in the U.S. So if one of those survey calls hits your phone, you can expect that to happen. We saw a deadly Russian missile strike that was very close to Greek leaders and President Zelensky's convoy. That was unexpected and certainly sent a message across to the region. A Ukrainian tank unit moved towards the front lines of the battlefields early on Monday, but didn't fire all this week until yesterday. The U.S. has also spent around $20 million to maintain the super yacht that was seized from the Russian oligarch, as that happened early in the battle. Quite interesting to see there that it's now been nearly 2 years as far as that situation goes. There's certainly costs with continuing to keep up that super yacht. Paul Whelan had an interview with CNN, stated that Navalny's death in prison is extremely worrying for him and other leaders in the area. Soldiers and civilians fear that what comes next as Russia gains momentum in eastern Ukraine and what that does for parts of Europe. So that's what I've got for headlines today.
Well, folks, here at the midday, grains are trading to the upside here as May corn is up about 5.25 cents at 434. May soybeans up 9.25 at 1157.5. Taking a look at the wheat contracts here, May Chicago wheat up 2.75 cents at 533.75. May hard red winter wheat up 17.5 cents at 573.75. And May spring wheat up 14 on the board at 659.25. As we take a look at livestock here in the midday, April live cattle are up 55 cents at $1.8780. April feeder cattle down 15 cents at $2.5572. And April lean hogs up 7 cents at $85.07.5. Let's turn it over to today's conversation, talking with Dr. Stephanie Weyer to get an update on avian influenza. Well, as we continue to watch avian influenza unpack and unfold here in the United States, it's still top of mind for many of our poultry growers. So we're chatting today with Dr. Stephanie Weyer, the National Incident Coordinator for HPAI. Dr. Weyer, thanks for joining us today on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate the chance to talk about the status of the current HPAI outbreak, as well as protecting our America's flock throughout it.
Absolutely. And we're excited to dig more into the current status around HPAI and where it's at today. But before we get into the nitty gritty of the current scenario, I'd like to dig in a little bit more about your role as the NIC. What are you focused on when it comes to avian influenza?
Oh, excellent question. So just to give you a little background, APHIS Foreign Animal Emergency Response is based on the National Response Framework and the National Incident Management System, and then also the Foreign Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Plan, which you call like FATPREP, during an animal emergency response. So USDA is the federal lead agency that deals with a highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPI, you know, as we call it for short. My role as the National Incident Coordinator, or NIC, is to lead the group of the Incident Coordination Group that has been specifically stood up for HPI. So what that is, basically, I'm the liaison between subject matter experts, local and national incident management teams, the states, and our industry partners. So what you do as the NIC is you're on call for any incident-related activities and issues. So that's kind of the overview of the position.
Yeah, it sounds like you could have your hands full in any circumstances as far as that goes. So what is kind of the state of the union here as we look at HPAI? How have things been holding up through the winter?
Well, so just to, again, give you just a quick overview on the current HPAI outbreak. So it's the largest that we have ever faced in the U.S. And as compared to the last major outbreak that we had in 2014, 2015, at that time, you know, we had approximately about 50 million birds that were affected in 15 states. At the current outbreak that's been going on since 2022, and unfortunately still ongoing, has affected more than 82 million birds in about 48 states. As we have seen in the winter, we had a slight uptick in detection, which was kind of suspected, just because our waves of HPI tend to go with migration in the spring and in the fall. And so as we had the fall migration with the wild birds heading down south again for the winter nesting grounds, we saw an increase in detections. But to just kind of give you a quick update about the latest. So, you know, the last 30 days, we only have seen 7 confirmed commercial flocks. So there's definitely a down trickle from what we've seen earlier in the fall.
Dr. Weyer, I think the big question, you know, that has been on my mind, and maybe producers as well, is just how does this round of avian influenza outbreak compare to the 2015 outbreak that we saw? And not only maybe from a number of birds perspective, but also from an economic impact to folks at the grocery store and growers.
Yeah, absolutely. So this outbreak, you know, the wild birds have been carrying it in all 4 major flyways in the US. And I'm not an economist, you know, but different segments of the industry have been affected differently. And that really depends on what else is happening at the time as well. Our USDA economists did find that HPI has been one of the factors driving the recent increase in egg prices for consumers. Outbreaks of HPI in commercial table egg layers and pullet flocks in November and December of 2023, you know, have caused depopulation of over 8 million laying hens. And many of these facilities are not yet eligible to restock. So there's a decrease in production for sure. On the good news is that so far in 2024, we only had one commercial layer that's been affected. So we do expect the impact to lessen over the next few months.
So, what can our producers be doing to protect their flocks from potentially contracting this?
That's an excellent question too. So at this stage in the game, biosecurity is really the best defense against HPI. So USDA continues to encourage all bird owners just to review our resources that we have for managing wildlife to prevent avian influenza, to really evaluate the biosecurity plans and develop a strategy to prevent any exposure to wild birds that are dropping. So practicing good biosecurity, preventing contact between their birds and wild birds, and then also reporting sick birds or any unusual bird deaths to their estates, the SAHO, the state veterinarian's office, federal official, or they can also reach the USDA toll-free sick bird hotline.
Well, Dr. Weyer, we certainly appreciate you sharing updates with us and our listeners today. And before we let you go, is there anything else that's important when thinking about where we're at today with HPAI?
Yeah, I would just like to say that our industry has really done a great job in minimizing lateral transmission and spread. So when we look at, the detections that we had in 2022 compared to 2014, 2015, the lateral spread, so the transmission from farm to farm, is much lower. We're currently only around 17%. Which was much higher during the 2014, 2015 outbreak. So really, USDA continues to work with states and industry to minimize any chance of that, because that really minimizes the disease transmission and helps us eradicate HPI.
So, if our listeners want to learn more about the studies and research that's being done, how best do they reach out to you or follow along?
Yes, so the best is I'm encouraging all of your listeners to go to the APHIS website for more information and resources. There's a ton of information posted regarding epidemiological studies that have been done, biosecurity tips. We have the whole Defend the Flock websites. They can go straight to the APHIS website, which is www.aphis.usda.gov. And search for those additional resources, as well as get the latest about detections in wild bird domestic fowls.
Well, there you go, Delaney. We're getting close to the end of this week and close to some exciting new Ag News Daily content coming your way. Listeners, you're not going to want to go too far to make sure you get to check that out. But for today, Delaney, what do you say? Should we let him go?
Let's let him go.